The World Series baseball, they put it in when it's a clutch time and you need a good hit, you put out one of your best hitters as a pinch hitter. Tonight, our pinch hitter, Patrick G from Lompoc.
Patrick Guthrie, alcoholic. Guilty. With an explanation, Your Honor. I can't help it. I see a gavel. I just got to pound it. I'm sorry for those of you who are expecting to hear Clancy. Hey, man, you got me. And it's all good. And I want to thank Billy for asking me at 4 o'clock. And no, I like filling in better than being booked. It takes all the ego out of it, and I've been really thinking a lot about why it is that I even speak at all. Like, why are we even in Alcoholics Anonymous at all? And did I introduce myself?
Yes.
Patrick Guthrie, alcoholic. And see, why I speak and why I'm here is also the biggest problem. You know what the biggest problem of Alcoholics Anonymous is? It's full of alcoholics. But it's also our biggest asset. And and we all have agendas and forces, and we don't think that's right and this is right. And even right now, like, my sponsor and a guy that I sponsor, one of my sponsees, are at a little war with each other, you know, and I'm just trying to stay out of the middle of it, you know, and so, you know, but I understand that. So I'm going to share some stuff tonight, and it's painful, you know what I mean. I'm glad to do it. I am. I'm happy to share. I really am. I just hope it doesn't fall on deaf ears, you know. And I guess that's kind of why I speak, you know. It's like I did a 9-step talk last Thursday. I also want to thank my buddy Cody for riding over here with me. The poor bastard, you know, he took a beating on the way over here. Because he's trying to tell me how I was doing this 9-step. I'm not his sponsor, by the way, so I can share this crap, all right? And it's with an ex-wife, no less, you know. And he did it over the phone. I was like, okay, that's cool, you know. Did you harm her over the phone? But no, I didn't say that. And but how the thing ended after I'm trying to dig out any really relevant information after I got, but she stabbed me first, you know, which was a pretty relevant thing. But was that I hung up on her. I go, that is a successful amends, you know what I mean? He's like, dude, I felt better before I got in the car with you. Shit. Sorry, man. I'm sorry. I love you, dude. You know, the other thing is, it's like I used to run track and cross country. I know it's really hard to believe, but I did. It's not that funny, man. Come on. And there's something about being coachable. You know what I'm saying? Like, can you take direction? And that's really like at the heart of this sponsor, sponsee, friends in AA, how we love each other or don't love each other. Are we coachable? And I'll tell you, I've met a few people in the time that I've been here. But I think Cody is one of those guys that's just so coachable. And that's why I like hanging out with him. I don't like people in general, but I do like you, man, so it's cool. That being said, dude, you hung up on her? What the hell? So I got sober May the 18th, 1986. I've got 30 years sober. I'm going to be 54 on the 10th, so all right, Scorpios. And I want to wish Patrick a happy birthday and Linda. Where is she at?
I'm back here.
Back here, okay. Happy birthday. And then I want to welcome the newcomers and people that are returning. And I know how hard it is. And this thing is, it seems like it gets talked about being a self-help program. I hate that. Because it really isn't. Because if we could have helped ourselves, by God, we wouldn't be here right now, you know? What it is, it's a program of surrender. And it asks us to keep giving stuff up all the time. Like stuff that we love. I mean, the first thing it asked me to give up was alcohol, you know. And really, I came in here because I had a little problem with heroin, all right? And I never really saw alcohol as a problem. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I drank every day. But I thought it was more like a breakfast beverage or something, you know. It just like, it didn't bring me into those, you know. And so that's kind of like where I came from. And the other thing is, too, is like I wish that I hadn't have done drugs. I wish that I was a pure alcoholic, you know, but I didn't. I mean, maybe I should have told myself, dude, don't smoke that weed. You won't be able to share as a pure alcoholic in an AA meeting, but I did it anyway. And and I know it upsets a lot of people. And if you're upset, I apologize. I do. That's a Johnny Cordero thing, man. You're gonna, I love that guy. Why didn't you call him, man? Who called this guy, man? Is this even an AA meeting anymore? Jeez. You know, I've been thinking a lot because I did that 9-step thing last week. Oh, I want to share a couple more things about David B. that's speaking at that meeting. That guy is one of my favorite speakers. If you get a chance to go hear him, he's crazy and he's awesome and he's funny. And I went in, I was a volunteer at the USP and met him in there. And I've heard him speak outside. I want to share just one of his opening jokes. He's like, because he's a bank robber, that's what he was in there for. And he's like, have you ever seen the movie Heat? I'm like, yeah, dude. He's like, yeah. Well, I was nothing like that. I was ready for him to start talking about the AKs and the, you know, Robin, but it was, I think his last drunk was under a bridge, you know, when they picked him up, so it was cool. Which is, I know that I would like to have this awesome, funny, great story, and it is what it is. I got sober when I was 23, and I couldn't believe the party was over. Really, I couldn't. In fact, if you're young here, the party's over. And if you're old, it's too late for you, man. Keep going. Woo! No, but I took a lot of crap for that, you know, about the whole I spilled more than you drank. And you know, it was like, I hung in there. I did. But I also came in and I did a lot of my growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, like, when I celebrated 5 years sober, I did it in LA County Jail. It was so amazing. Not as a volunteer either. I was like arrested and put in there. And what it was for cable piracy. Arrgh! You know? Like, TV should be free. And it will be if you pay me $300. And I was selling those boxes. And so, no, I'm not making anybody a box. Just lay off after the meeting, all right? But there's always somebody, dude, can you give me one of those boxes, you know? And what it really was about was, it was about a lot of fear of financial insecurity and not willing to accept the gifts that God gave me, the talents that God gave me. I put them to, like, a negative use. And I never thought that experience would turn into like a full-time job, you know, for security, network security, but hey, it has. And it's something about when you're arrested for hacking into a cable company, they really like to hire you. So, how did you do it, man? And anyway, when I went into LA County, they told me, like, I had gotten arrested, and it took a long time for the whole court thing. And once you get in the court system, you know how it's really a pain. And I had a lawyer screwed me. That's really what it was. I was guilty as hell. But when I went in there, I had a couple weeks. Like, when I finally went to the judge, he said, you know, how much time do you need to get your affairs in order? And I was like, are you out of your mind, man? I've been trying for my whole life to get my affairs in order. I was like, 2 years? He's like, no, dude, 2 weeks, clank. And so for the 2 weeks before I went in there, I thought, okay, I'm going to work out in there and get in really good shape, and, you know, it's going to be awesome, and make turn the lemon into a lemonade, right? And so I got some new shoes, and I was going to work out, and I got in there, and it was L.A. County, and it was a really pleasant place, and it was the 9500. It was Old Central Jail, you know, because it was a computer crime, and apparently somebody had typed themselves out, like, 6 months before that, and they said, oh, this guy's going to type himself out. I'm like, dude, if I could type myself out, I wouldn't even be here right now, right? And so I get in there, and I'm in with a lot of surly fellows, and several of them said, well, this is how it went down. It's like, Holmes, those are my shoes, man. I'm like, no, man, I got these at the Big Five before I came in here. Like, no, man, those are my shoes. And I said, no, Ron, really, I bought these at the Big Five. I've just got in here, man. It's all cool. And then, bam, I woke up, and I was barefooted, and apparently they were his shoes. And good times, really. And I did my 3 months and 15 days, a hard time, and now I do H&I. No, it is kind of a funny joke in there, because I go into CMC twice a month, and so it's mostly lifers in there, and so now the joke is, like, they all look at my shoes, like, oh, okay, yeah, I got you, here it is, I'll just give them to you, man, don't hit me, please, and so, like, how do you get 5 years of sobriety and end up in L.A. County Jail? I mean, really, how does that happen? And how do you get a lot of time in here and be freaking miserable? How does it happen? It's really easy. It is. And in fact, it's quite natural, I think, when you get a lot of time in here to get what I would call chronic untreated alcoholism. Because things start to get better, and pretty soon you don't... I need to go to that meeting. And plus, it's full of alcoholics, man. God, they're all so screwed up. They're bringing me down. You know what I mean? And all the crap that goes through your head. And so this is how it happened for me. Was I was raised in Lompoc. My dad was stationed in the Air Force, and I went to La Prisma School. And I went to Catholic church. I'm not going to bash the Catholics. Don't worry. I love the Catholics. And I went to Mass every morning, and my parents were heavily involved in it. And but the thing was going on is my dad was molesting my sister and I. And it didn't make me alcoholic. It didn't. It just made me a molestee, I guess, you know, a victim. Oh, I hate that word, victim, you know. But that's what I was. And I was really trapped in that thing. I couldn't. I mean, I don't even remember when the abuse started. I don't. I've tried to, like, two or three years old. I don't know. All I know was, like, it didn't stop until I left the house. And so I had that anger and resentment going at him, and then it went on to the church and on to principals and later on onto coaches. And I found a little outlet was my running. I know, it's hard to believe. I ran a 4:18 mile in high school, which was pretty good, but not great, but it got me into college. I have 5 years of college. Awesome, dude, but no degree. Because man, that was a fun time, man. We were getting partying. And the other thing about running and being a runner is, like, you don't have to drink much to get more or less insanely drunk. I mean, I was a buck 35, and I'm not going to tell you how much I am now, but it was more than that. And and I could drink, like, 3 beers, like, strip off my clothes and running across campus. And I did that, really. I ran into the fountain. The cops were trying to catch me with the batons, you know. I would slow up a little bit, you know, just to kind of give them a little bit of... I felt sorry for him, you know. The baton is beating against him. Come on, man. And I'm like flopping in the wind. And all right. Flopping in the wind. All right. Woo! And God, is this even an AA meeting anymore, man? We have really digressed. Get Clancy out of the... Get him into the jaws of life, man. We can pull him out of that car wreck. He was hit by a drunk driver, I heard. That's pretty fucking funny. I mean, really, man, it's just like, wow. It's just, it's always real here. And you know, that whole thing of being angry and blaming my father for everything. And it culminated into, like, I played in this punk rock band. And how many people have heard me before? Just, you know, do I need to tell the punk rock story, really?
Yes.
Oh, man, you guys are a glutton for punishment. All right. So I played in this band. You probably heard of us, Anorexic Sacrifice. No, we sucked. But it's punk rock, so who cares? And we're playing this show in Austin, Texas, and we were the first of 30 bands. The headliner were the Butthole Surfers and Flipper. If you're a fan of punk rock on. By this time I am like shooting 2 number 4 Dilaudids a day, and I'm drinking Captain Morgan's spice rum. Maybe it was, I knew I was destined to be a cable pirate. You know, Captain Morgan's, arg, you know, we pull into, first I was in Springfield, Missouri. That's where I was going to school at. And so driving from Springfield to Austin, Texas is like its own country. And we're driving, are we there yet? And finally we pull into Austin and we're still 10 or 15 minutes away from the VFW where they're showing the place where this night it wasn't veterans only. It was like all the crazy punk rock guys. And I thought, you know what? I should probably eat something before we go in there. And so we went into Burger King and I ate a Whopper in like 3 bites and went into the bathroom, tapped a number 4, finished my Captain Morgan spice rum. Arrgh! And we pull up to the place, and the guy's like, "You're late, man. You're not gonna have time to warm up." And I'm like, "We're fine." And so we get up on stage, and there's a couple hundred people there, but they're all the way in the back, and no one's gonna listen to us because we're the first band. The first band sucks worse than the last band. But except these 5 neo-Nazi skinheads that are sitting right in the front. Let me tell you something. They hate everybody. But they hated me at that moment most of all. And so here I am. Family man, with your life so planned, I'd like to crucify you to your front door with nails from your well-stocked garage. Woo! Right? And so the main skinhead is like... I mean, he's pulling this down from his nuts, man. It's coming up. And he, like, lets it fly. And I can see it spinning at me. It's slow motion. It is, but I'm powerless to get out of the way. And it's like, smack, right in the face. And it wasn't the texture, which was nasty. It was the smell. My God, what did this guy eat? And the Captain Morgan's is like, "Arr!" And the Dilaudid was, "Arr!" And the Whopper's like, "Coming up." And I'm like, "Arr!" I Godzilla'd on these guys. I'm talking projectile vomit. The guy was picking pickle out of his ear, and he was none too happy about it. He pulled me off the stage, and he starts to pummel me. I mean, I can feel that I'm taking damage, right? But I'm on a Schedule 1 narcotic they give to dying cancer patients because I stole them from my grandmother. I should know. And I can't feel anything except the eye is starting to close. You know what I mean? And the stars, the flashes. I'm about to go out, and they finally pulled this Neanderthal off of me. The band never stopped playing. They're like, da 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 da. And all the people in the back are like, "Dude, that guy just threw up on that skinhead. He's getting his ass kicked. It's punk rock, yeah!" And they all came up, man. It was a miracle. They threw me back up on stage. I'm bleeding. I'm wounded. And the show went on, man. It went on in punk rock lore, you know. In fact, every time we played after that, you could hear it. They're like, "Puke, puke, puke." Even my bass player was like, "Dude, do you think you could puke again? Because that thing worked for us, man." Because it sure ain't your singing, you know. And I said, "God, we're Anorexic Sacrifice, not Bulimic Banquet, for God's sake." All right, a cloud pleaser. And that was the high point of my using, all right? You get it? So I want to tell you that I did manage to finally get sober, and I called the hotline, and these guys came and picked me up. Oh, God, here comes the boring part where you get sober. And I called the hotline, these guys picked me up, and I was wearing a trench coat, and I had half of my head shaved, and the other half was like a blue-black thing going. I don't know if I was goth or undead or what, but I had it going. And they picked me up, and they were so happy to see me, and I was like, mildly, you know, like, oh God. And because the end had come, and they put me in the back of this Datsun B210 between two of them, and they took me to the meeting. Oh, we're so glad to have you here. I'm like, all right. And we pull up to this meeting at the St. James Episcopal Church in Springfield, Missouri, and it's like everybody is laughing. It's like this place, you know, the smell of coffee. Back then, when the meetings were good, you could smoke. There was like a nice haze of smoke going in there. And it was amazing. And people were sharing horrible things about near suicides. And everyone's laughing. I'm like, what kind of sick bastards are you, man? This guy tried to hang himself and you're laughing about it, you know? And I loved you guys right away. I did. I got I love the macabre, and this place is macabre. So when you hang out around here, you want to be involved, you know? And so you want to start working the steps because you hear people talking about them. You want to, okay, everyone's working the steps. I'd like to be able to speak on step one, so I better work it. And I got me a sponsor, and the way I treated the steps was like running the mile, you know? Okay, 418, I'm going to be the first person to finish it in 4 months. Ah, score, you know? But it's not a race, and that's the thing. But it's okay if you race through it. It is. In fact, it's good. Just get through them whatever way you have to do it, because you're going to have to redo it again. And again. And again. It's okay, man. So I got this sponsor, and I'm on this ninth step, and I've got about 3 years sober. And by this time, I've moved from Springfield. I'm living in Long Beach, and I love Long Beach AA, man. It's awesome. And the guy that I had was kind of, he only had about a year more than I did in sobriety, and he was a little on the edge, you know. And I picked him on that for that very purpose. I figured he wouldn't hold my feet to the fire on anything, you know. And so I'm on the ninth step, and he's like, okay, well, you should probably go and make amends to your mom and dad. I'm like, okay. And so I flew. They were living in Milwaukee. I flew out there. I'm in the living room with them. And all of a sudden, I look across at my dad, and I'm like, I don't owe this guy an amends. He owes me the amends. And all this stuff started coming up, and I just was like, I did everything but vomit Burger King on him. You know what I mean? Like, and they said, don't you ever come back here again. You're not welcome. You're not my son. I'm not your son. I'll never come back here. I was a free spirit roaming the cosmos before you two had to screw and bring me down here, man. Come on, I didn't ask for this. And come on, Sam Kennison, give it up. And I left out of there, and that was a good amends, you know. Because the thing I failed to get was that I hadn't forgiven him. I hadn't. And deeper than that, I didn't even see that I needed to forgive him, you know. And so I'm out in Long Beach on my own, and I've got my little AA community, kind of, because I won't let anybody get really close to me, and I like to isolate, and I don't like people, okay, and I especially don't like them, whatever they are. I don't know who it is, and so I've got this money thing I'm afraid of, and I have a fairly good job, but it's not like the cable piracy job, man. I mean, that's easy money, you know. And so it was easy until the Lakewood Sheriff's Department kicked down the door and everybody on the ground, and I've got, you know, 300 cable boxes disassembled in a warehouse, you know. And that's how it happens, you know. It doesn't happen overnight that you get thrown in jail. It doesn't happen overnight that you drink again. It doesn't happen overnight, you don't even have to drink, that you're just freaking miserable in here, you know. And it's like, God, another meeting, man. Shoot me, man. Really? I got to listen to these guys again, especially this guy from Lompoc. I wanted Clancy, God. Come on. the funny thing is, it was actually Clancy that saved my life, which is an interesting thing. So actually one of his sponsees. I went through the next 10 years not talking to my mom and dad. And pretty much just kind of like powering through this thing, you know. I felt like I was a member, you know, because I said all the right things. But it's kind of like being at the airport. And you've got your bags right there. And everybody's coming in and off the plane. It feels like you're traveling, but you haven't left the airport. That's what I felt like. I'm just kind of like watching it all. Yeah, man. Hey, yeah. But I'm not, I haven't cracked the eggs yet, you know. So things were getting intense. A lot of people from the class of 86 in Lompoc were relapsing, and I knew I was next. A buddy of mine told me about this meeting up in L.A. I should go to it. And no, it's not the Pacific Group. It was another meeting. I'm glad I didn't go there. I am. I went to this other meeting and I met this guy named Clint Hodges and I asked him to be my sponsor. And everybody's like, dude, you don't want that guy to be your sponsor, man. I'm like, yeah, man. I liked what he had to say. He's like, dude, it won't work, man. You're a punk rock and he is a Marine captain, ex-Marine captain. And an attorney. Oh, I love attorneys, dude. I love it. I got a bunch of attorney jokes. Oh, God, don't tell any attorney jokes this guy. He's nuts. And so I did. I asked him to be my sponsor. He started taking me through the steps. And it was a grind. A year I was on the first step. And I would have to meet with him every Sunday morning. It was like, oh, my God. And we would read like two sentences. And he would say, we're plowing through this material, aren't we? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So one morning, I had been working with him for a couple of years, and I made a stupid joke, some attorney joke, right? And he got so angry and he's screaming at me and I'm trying to like, keep it down, man. The guys are out there in the front, you know, because he was sponsored a lot of guys. And I was more worried about being embarrassed than I was about hurting his feelings, which is a very common thing for me because I don't care about anybody else but myself. And that's the problem. And so he starts screaming at me and he goes, we're done. I'm not helping you anymore. We're done. And we might as well go see a movie because you're wasting my time. Like, no, it's been helping. I swear I'm getting something out of this. And he's like, well, here's the deal. I'm going to have to ask you to do something you're not going to be willing to do. And I'm like, well, at least tell me what it is. He's like, well, would you be willing to do it? What is it? He's like, answer the question! He's like, oh, okay, I'm willing. All right, look it, newcomers, this is a sponsored joke. Don't fall for it. Sponsored trick, okay? So I said, would you, he goes, you need to forgive your dad. I'm like, my dad, what has he got to do with it? Now, I'm going to tell you something about this. I never told anybody about that. That was a take to your grave, embarrassing years and years and years of abuse and shame and humiliation. I'm not going to tell anybody, let alone a bunch of people from Santa Maria, you know what I'm saying? Because I was bearing that thing. It was bearing down on me. Let alone this guy, Clint Hodges in Woodland Hills on a Sunday morning. What has he got to do with it? He goes, oh, I think he's got everything to do with it. And here's the deal. I'm not going to be another one of the failed male authority figures in your life. So you're either willing to forgive him or you're not. Like, okay, man, I am. He goes, okay, willingness without action is fantasy. And here's the deal. I'm like, what? In 3 weeks, we're going to have this retreat. And you're going to be there. And for the next 3 weeks, you're going to pray to your 9-volt battery God, because that's about the juice you're pulling off that battery. I was so insulted, you know. But you're going to pray to that 9-volt battery God of yours for the willingness to forgive your dad. And I'll see you in 3 weeks. Now get the hell out of here, kid. And I left. And for 3 weeks, I prayed to my 9-volt battery God. And 3 weeks later, I'm sitting at the Mary Joseph Retreat Center. I can't get away from the Catholics in Palos Verde. And it's a men's retreat. There's 75 of us. And it's a Saturday night. And it's the 8-step. And there's only about 7 or 8 of us at this forgiveness exercise. Because nobody wants to do that, man. I didn't even want to do it. But I was afraid of him. You know what? It's funny because I wasn't afraid of him. I was afraid. I've always been afraid that the truth is there is no God. That's what terrified me. Like, I'm just out here on my own alone. There never was a God. And so if I how am I going to pray to something I don't even think is really exist? That it's all a figment of our imagination. But I could say an Our Father and a Hail Mary really good, man. I can. I can say an act of contrition and say the rosary. I'm a speed prayer. And I can pray when the chips are down. God, get me out of this. I swear I won't do it again. But here I am at this Mary Joseph Retreat Center. And Clint pulls out this thing from Emmett Fox, which is like really religious. And inside of it, it's the Our Father, the prayer, which... Don't get me started. I hated that prayer. I hate it because I hated Jesus and religion and God and you and, you know what I'm saying? But I was a real, I would have never said anything. I'd just been like, shoot, you're embarrassing yourself right now with that God crap. To myself, I would never say it. And here I am with him, and he's pulling, and the Christ in you, and in the Our Father, the one sentence about forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. That is where this forgiveness exercise is. There's like 7 pages this guy wrote on. He had a lot of free time, and inside of those 7 pages is I fully and freely forgive my dad. The whole business, I'm done with it. So I said the words, I fully, freely forgive my dad. The whole business. And it's words. I know it. And I can't adequately explain it right now. I can't. I wish I could. I wish I could give it to you. Or I wish I was a better orator or something. But I felt a weight lift off of my shoulders. I felt a weight like I had been carrying for a long time. I mean, it was weird. And then he's like, is there anybody else you want to forgive? All right, my mom, she should have protected me. See, I was a victim, man. I was a victim, and I set up all my relationships to be the victim. It was always her fault. It was always their fault. It was always the cops. Lawyer screwed me, you know. Always somebody else's fault besides mine. And I set it up like that. I would get into these relationships with these girls that I had no business being in. And then when they left, I'm like, shh, see? They left me. Forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. You know, like, put me up on the cross, for God's sakes. But in that meeting, man, in that night, candlelight, Clint and I, I'm going through and I'm letting everybody off the hook. I am. All of them. The principal Farwell, all the cops, the DEA, all those guys who wronged me, man. I'm letting them off the hook. I'm forgiving them all. And you know who's getting free? Me. I'm the one. I never realized that. I really thought I had to man up and carry that crap in. I can't forgive my dad. It would be an injustice to the little Patrick who got abused every day. I can't do that. But I had no choice. Back to the wall, gun to the head. I had to let it go. I had to. I wish I could tell you I was such a great AA member and I did it fully and freely. I didn't. I went kicking and screaming. I knew I was going to drink if I didn't do it. I knew it. And so we're sitting there. And by this time, I'm letting everybody out. The other 6 or 7 guys that were in there are already gone because they're not as screwed up as me, I like to think. And Clint and I are knee to knee in this dark room with the candle burning out. And he's like, is there anybody else or anything else you want to forgive? And I thought, okay, I want to forgive God. I know it sounds crazy, but I did it. I fully and freely forgive. And this is what happened for me, was Chuck Chamberlain talks about the sunlight of the Spirit. And that the sun is always out there, but we have the curtains closed. And tinfoil on the windows for the tweakers. I want to make it relative. And I don't want to leave anybody out, right? So what happened for me is I peeled the tinfoil off the windows and opened up the curtains, and I felt it. I felt this power greater than myself. The one that I was so afraid of actually acknowledging for fear that there wasn't going to be an answer. And I felt it, and I felt the answer, and I continue to feel that to this day. And it I felt like a teenager at a retreat, you know, those teen retreats, the spiritual retreats that go on, they're all full of the love of Jesus and all that. And I felt that, man. My heart was on fire, and I felt connected like I've never felt connected before. And then I slept well that night, and the next morning I knocked on Clint's door, and it was early, and he wouldn't keep knocking and knocking. Finally, he opens the door. His hair's all messed up. I obviously woke him up. I didn't realize that. And I'm like, Clint. He's like, oh, God. He slammed the door. And I'm like, I don't care, man. I feel great. And I turn to walk away, and he opens the door. It's Mother's Day. Call your mom, Mr. Great, and slam the door. And I did. Look, it's not like I didn't want to call my mom before. I wanted to. I tried. The phone felt like it weighed 150 pounds. And here's what it would sound like. Okay, if she says this, I'm going to say this. And she puts my dad on the phone. Bam, I'm hanging up. That's what would happen. I never made the call. But this morning, I got on there. It was Mother's Day. I dialed the number, and my mom answered the phone. I said, Mom, it's Patrick. She's like, oh, honey, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, Mom. I am. I just called to wish you a happy Mother's Day. We've missed you so much. God missed you too. Now that is the beginning of an amends. That is not the amends, okay? And for the next, 9 months, I worked until I could actually go and make formal amends. The other thing that was happening was my wife was pregnant and with our first child. And we had been trying to have kids and this time it was going through, and I wasn't afraid. And I'm sitting right there, man. I'm at the. I wanted her born in Lompoc. We moved from Long Beach 13 years ago, and I wanted her to be born in Lompoc. And I know you guys hate Lompoc. I love it. Okay, no, I get it. We're the armpit of Santa Barbara County. I get it, man. I'm glad we've had this talk. All right, man. But I love it. And I wanted her to be born there. I always wanted to be born there. I was born in Wichita, Kansas. Lame. But my dad was in the Air Force, so that's where we were stationed. And so we moved up here, and she was born, and I was right there. I was right there when she was born. And I was like right there. Fellas, it'll kill your sex life. Let me just tell you that right now. You're like, what the hell? How is that even possible? And all of a sudden, like, my fascination with breasts, because I thought they were mine. No, they're to feed the child. Really? That's what they're for? Shit. Wow, that's amazing, man. Wow. And I picked up that little baby, and she looked up at me and smiled, and she hasn't stopped smiling since, except maybe this year when she's 13, you know. She does give me those looks. I mean, my little baby just loves her daddy, you know. She gave me a look the other day, like, I made a comment about posting on Instagram. She says, it's not a post. Like, are you a dumbass? I'm like, you know, I can read every one of those things. No, you can't. I'm like, okay. I'm a dumbass. And so the thing is, so that this little girl was just yet another gift from this God that I really made that connection with. Like, I know now that God loves me through her, you know, and I know that God loves her through me, and I can see this. And it's same right now with Cody. I know on our conversation over here, I know you took a beating, but I know that God loves you through me, and vice versa. I know it. It seems like I'm taking an ass kicking from God. You are. And I am his holy, mighty soldier. Guilty. All right. So I want to talk about the actual amends with my dad and my mom. So Clint made me, we gleaned this from my fourth step, all the damage I had done, and I did a pretty thorough fourth step, And in there, we basically, he was like, had F or A or FA on the page. F for forgive, or forgive and amend. And I had a lot of FAs on there. And so on this card, I had to write down the exact nature of my wrongs. Now, this is where it gets a little tricky for people, I think, sometimes making amends. So you never, this is my personal opinion, okay? So take it for what it's worth. I don't think you say, I'm sorry. I think I'm sorry, they heard it a lot. It's like, I'm sorry, like, oh, okay, whatever, you know. But you've got to, like, express what it is that you did wrong, okay? Now, when you have a resentment that's really righteous, I'm talking about one that you can't really see your part in, child abuse, pretty righteous resentment, you know, what did I do, you know? And I have to forget all of that. That's not my part of it. My part of it is I stole money from them. I embarrassed him. I put them through hell every time. And I would do it and just giggle and laugh like, yeah, you know, and wrecked cars. And, you know, the police were there. You know, the good family stuff. And then there was that fist fight we got into when the neighbors actually pulled out their, like, lawn chairs to watch. It was like the UFC in the front yard of the Guthrie house, you know. And so those were the my exact wrongs. And I told him, this is what I've done wrong. And we're sitting at a coffee shop. Didn't do it in the house. And I also didn't do it with my mom. I did it with him specifically. In a neutral place. We're not there to drink coffee, but I'm there to make the amends. And then I asked him, what can I do to make it right? And he said, be the best father you can to Dorothy. Which is my daughter's name, Dorothy. Which means gift of God, which we didn't know. Which is pretty cool. I went and did the same thing with my mom, and on my way out of their house, after I dropped my mom off, my dad handed me this CD, and it said Sexaholics Anonymous, QG, on it. I'm like, what? And I got in the car, plugged it in, on my way back out to the airport, and it was him.
Wow.
Talking just like I am talking to you tonight. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it was painful. I heard what he said, and it sounded like the remorse and regret and shame and all the stuff that I felt as a using, drinking alcoholic. And, you know, in the fourth step in the book, it talks about seeing that man as being sick. That's when it hit me. I saw him as being sick. Like, how can I expect him to give my recovery, or anybody, my recovery, any validity if I'm not willing to give him his? And come to find out, he like sponsors 30 guys. I had no idea. I didn't. And even if he would have told me, I would have thought, you're a lying sack of crap. I had to hear it. I had to hear it. I had to hear it from the podium. I had to hear it. I had to see it. And it was at that moment that the resentment was disappeared, gone. And, you know, my mom died, and I always wished my dad a death of 1,000 needles, slow, horrible death. But not now. I was, like, free of it. And when my mom died, she wanted her ashes scattered at Big Sur. And we drove up the coast and scattered her ashes out there together. And he cried, and I cried, and that's an amends. That's so much more powerful than saying I'm sorry. It's actually going there when somebody is in pain and helping them. You see, it's not I'm sorry. If it was, God, we are a sorry lot. We are. And so, you know, I started off by saying, why is it that I talk? It's because of that. It's a painful thing, but it's because I hope that somebody, and maybe it's just me that I need to hear it, that this program works, and that you need to be coachable. That when you're asked to do something, just go over and above on it. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when you know the Raiders and Broncos are going to be playing, you say, screw it, man. Screw it. You know? You're going to go to Santa Maria. You're going to talk. And you're going to be happy about it, damn it. Really, I love you guys. I have from the very beginning. And I love you now. And thanks for letting me share.